Hi, I'm Kristen Denhartog, and I'm going to read to you from my novel Origin of Halos, which is more or less the story of how a lie sparks a series of tragic events in the lives of two families. Robbie Hayes was home for the holidays. Though he was going into his final term of university, that night he wore his old high school jacket, purple and gold, with the word Mustangs curved across its back. Gloved hands in his purple pockets, he skated backwards in circles. The blades of his newly sharpened skates gleamed, but the brown leather was scuffed and well-worn. Alone on the ice, he performed magnificently. Other than Robbie, two young women had been skating on the river that evening, but now they were leaving. They had removed their skates and pulled on their boots and were climbing the hill to the road above. Robbie watched them go. He turned and skated forwards, picking up speed, then jumped and spun in the air, landing on one leg with the other stretched cleverly behind him. Perhaps he hoped the women had stopped to watch him, but they had not. No one witnessed his final pirouette. The women turned left when they reached the road and soon disappeared completely. The night was quiet in the way that only winter nights can be. Robbie's skates sliced through the silence. When the ice cracked open, it was sometime after 9 p.m., and before 10 p.m., a cumbersome, vague fact determined only by two more distinct ones. The young women who had not turned to watch him later recalled that it had been 9 p.m. when they'd left the river, and it was 10 p.m. when Joe, Kay, Estelle, and Louis LeBlanc passed on the road above and heard the tired screaming. No one had heard the much louder, wide-awake screaming that had come earlier. 5,000 people were in their homes that night. Fires crackled in the warm, deaf houses, and dead trees glowed with tinsel and lights. Here and there an ornament twirled slowly and stopped. Gifts lay beneath the trees in their torn wrappings, and soft music hummed from radios. The young LeBlanc family had been in such a home the night of the tragedy. They had been visiting Kay's parents at their house on the river, and now were on their way back to 40 Huron Street. Kay hooked her arm in the crook of Joe's elbow, and Joe, with his free hand, pulled Estelle and Louis in a sleigh. He had just turned to check on them when he heard the faint cry for help. Estelle blinked at the sound, and when her eyes reopened, they were looking into Joe's. Joe stared back at his daughter, at the bits of blonde curl that escaped from her hat. He stopped walking and listened. All of them held still. Their clouds of breath hovered and dispersed. Joe ran to the edge of the hill that overlooked the river. He saw the ice and the jagged black hole and a figure barely moving. He ran, slid, ran down the hill and onto the ice, and from here he could see all the cracks emanating from the hole and snapping out at him like snakes. He flopped to his stomach and slid toward the figure, who had begun to move more vigorously at the sight of a possible savior. The man lifted his arms, but as though they were dead weight, they fell and splashed in the water. Joe couldn't get close enough to grab him. He unzipped his coat and struggled out of it, but not even his own long arm, extended by his two long sleeves, could reach the sinking man's shaking, outstretched hand. "Hang on, buddy," Joe called. "I'll get you out of there." He grabbed his coat and hurried back up the hill, where Kay stood with the children. He looked at the handle on the children's sleigh, but there was nothing to use to loosen it. With his eyes full of tears, he looked at Kay, pulled off her scarf, and raced back down the hill, tying the scarf to the sleeve of his coat as he ran. And when he got down on the ice again, ready to send one end of the makeshift lifeline toward the man, he saw who it was. Robbie Hayes. Joe LeBlanc stopped. Kay called out to him, but he stayed still, holding the scarf and the coat in a ball in his hands. He stared at Robbie, who, though visibly tiring, reached out to Joe. He groaned and stretched his arms toward Joe's coat and the scarf, but Joe didn't move. He looked down at his bundle and up into Robbie's vacant eyes. A bird cawed, and Joe, as though emerging from a trance, shook his head and sent the lifeline into the air, hanging on to one end. Robbie lifted a limp arm, and it fell again as quickly. His eyes appeared heavy, and his lips were almost blue. "Take it!" Joe screamed. Robbie lifted his futile hand once more. When it fell, he smiled and then moaned. "Take the scarf, please, take the scarf." But Robbie's eyes were downcast. He looked into the water where his hand had fallen. His face dropped forward, and he was gone. No one but Robbie himself can know how calm he felt, how warm. After the initial plunge and the freezing, the panic and the frantic treading of water, the yelling for help and the ice that shattered at his every touch, after all that, a glorious heat spread through him. It began somewhere in his center and flowed slowly through his torso and limbs, as though a glass of thick, hot liquid had been upturned inside of him. Never had he felt such peace and warmth. "I'm dying," he thought. "I'm going to die here." He knew he should not give up, that he should continue to call, but he was no longer motivated by cold or fear. Rather, he was warm, and he was swimming in warm water. He made some sounds to see if his voice would still work, and that was when the man came. He seemed to fly down the hill, down, up again, and down. Robbie smiled and reached out to him. He could not imagine leaving his warm bath, but he would try. He would not die without trying. He stretched his hand toward the man with the shining eyes, but the man did not reach to help him. The eyes looked cold, and the tips of Robbie's fingers, which were pointing at the man, had begun to lose their heat. He let his hand drop in the warm water, and he smiled again. The man was throwing things and yelling now, but Robbie was tired. He lifted his hand and waved to the stranger, because after all, this was the last person he would ever see.